You're listening to the Meet the Farmers podcast with me, Ben Eagle. To listen to previous episodes, visit thinkingcountry.com or find the podcast on iTunes by searching for Meet the Farmers. Hello, Happy New Year, and welcome to this special episode of Meet the Farmers. A particular welcome to any of you who went along to either this year's Oxford Real Farming Conference or the Oxford Farming Conference. It's those two conferences that this episode focuses on. Whilst the Oxford Farming Conference has been established for 73 years, the Oxford Real Farming Conference was celebrating its 10th anniversary this year, which felt yet another coming of age, especially as 1,000 delegates filled Oxford Town Hall, the venue for the event. The OFC is held just down the road at the Oxford University Examination Rooms and attracts around about 600 delegates. It was my first time at the OFC and my fourth at the ORFC, and I won't pretend it wasn't an exhausting and logistical challenge to go to both. I didn't and couldn't see all of the presentations that I wanted to. Thankfully, though, a lot of the sessions have been recorded and are available on YouTube. I strongly suggest you have a look, and if you're listening to this on thinkingcountry.com, you can find the links below. The theme of this podcast episode is common ground, and I ask the question, is now the time that the Oxford Farming Conference and the Oxford Real Farming Conference collaborate more, and if so, how do they do that? I want to thank the committees of both conferences for putting on brilliant events. Content-wise, at Oxford Farming, we had everything from a radical vision for agriculture from Green MP Caroline Lucas to the traditional yet very entertaining Oxford Union debate. Oxford Real was, as usual, incredibly diverse, with lots of practical farming sessions, as well as debates and discussions on subjects such as natural capital, veganism, rewilding, and Brexit. At the OFC, I enjoyed some of the fringe sessions, including one on the Wednesday afternoon chaired by OFC Director Matt Naylor and led by the National Federation of Young Farmers Clubs and the Rural Youth Project. After this session, I spoke to Jane Craigie of Jane Craigie Marketing, who founded the Rural Youth Project, and I first asked her how the project began.
Project started really because we do a lot of work in the rural sector, in marketing and communications, and we travel a lot with that work. And one of the enduring things you find in any rural place is how many young people leave those places because they can't earn enough, they can't find the jobs that they want, the housing's poor, transport's expensive. What we also saw is a lot of young people that want to stay and will make a life in rural places. So we were really intrigued on, you know, what was motivating people to leave, what was encouraging those to stay. So we wanted to understand exactly what the dynamics of that were. So it started off by us saying, right, let's just launch a survey. So we did, and we started talking to some partners, organisations that we were involved with through some rural leadership programmes we've been involved in, and everybody was really interested. So what was originally going to be maybe 12 questions, extended to become a 60-question survey. It ran over 6 months. We had 750 responses, and we explored everything from housing to digital connectivity, physical connectivity, do you need a car to live where you live, to live where you work, social dynamics, services. And a lot of it was what we would expect. So housing is expensive. You need a car. So 78% said they need a car to live where they do. Digital connectivity is lousy. Yet, despite all of those overriding continuous issues that we see and hear, 72% of the respondents were optimistic about the future.
Was there anything that you were particularly surprised by in the findings?
Yeah, there was a few things. One was the degree of optimism and the desire to stay there, to build a life. The second thing was the importance of cool business. So yes, businesses are important in rural places to keep that economy going. But for the generation, I don't like using the term millennial, but it describes that age group and younger, actually what they earn isn't as important if that business is cool. So if there's something that gives them the lifestyle that they want or allows them to live where they want, that will compensate a lot for income that they forego by being where they want to be. So that was really interesting. The other thing that was fascinating was the number of people that have come back to or have remained in a rural area because of family connections or because of their partner. Now, some of that's good. It gives opportunity. So if you go back to a family farm, for example, there's the opportunity of doing something on that farm. But there's also the obligation and the challenge that comes with being in a relationship, whether that's a family relationship or a partner relationship, which makes that complex. And it can mean, and you know, we're here at the Oxford Farming Conference, and we've had a fringe meeting on rural young people. And the number of people that have said they earn way below what they should be because they're working in a family business. So it's a self-perpetuating problem, but the thing that's amazed me is how keen young people are to ride over all of those challenges to make a life and to make a meaningful life in rural places.
A quick mention on your marketing team here at the conference, because you've been here several years now. Give me a glimpse into the behind the scenes of Jane Craigie at the OFC.
So we've been involved with the conference for 14 years, running the media and the marketing. Absolutely love the conference. And I think it's the conversations that happen off stream at the conference which are most amazing. So in the bar late at night or at breakfast, you don't know who you're going to be sitting with and you don't know what their views are. And I just love that open debate. And that's the thing that keeps me so engaged with this conference.
Have you ever been down the road at the Oxford Reel?
I have. I think there's a huge amount of common ground. I really, really respect what Colin and Ruth have done in launching the conference. I think it was clever. I think it was controversial. I love disruption. So everything that they've done, I think it has been amazing. You know, there are times when I'm working here and I would love to be down the road listening to some of the sessions down there because they are complementary. Some of them are challenging, but some of the content here is challenging as well. So I think it's absolutely right that the two conferences are here. They have the debate that they do. I love the earthy integrity of the Real Farming Conference. And actually, dare I say it, and again, this is personally, you know, some of that would be valuable here. And just the same, that I think some of what's here, the ingredients of here, would work down the road as well. And we've had meetings with Ruth and Colin about how can we do more together. And as far as I would say, bring that on, because it's what we need.
Super, Jane. Have a great conference. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you, Ben.
For the last few years, there has been a joint OFC-ORFC event open to delegates from both conferences. This year, it was a cider tasting, although in reality, a lot of people did far more than tasting, myself included, I must say, with three cider producers describing the ciders and answering questions. It was chaired by Anna Hill, very expertly given the alcohol and the number of people involved. I also had a brief conversation with rural commentator Rob York before we outstayed our welcome, being always the last to leave. First, though, here's Anna Hill, and I asked her why it's important to have a joint session that brings delegates from both conferences together.
I think the main reason is to get ideas flowing. And it's very interesting, isn't it, that the Oxford Real Farming Conference and the Oxford Farming Conference are both doing the same job, farming the land, caring for the environment, producing food for people. Both coming from quite different angles, but there's a huge amount in common. And in fact, actually, the more people talk together about ideas, about innovation, the more they realise that, in fact, actually, their aims are very, very similar. And I think it is really important when you bring people together like this, especially over a glass of cider or a glass of beer, you know, that actually they suddenly realise, oh, hang on a minute, you know, you're teaching me something, I can teach you something, and sharing ideas is really important.
And you have more experience than most people in terms of speaking to a wide variety of people across the rural sector. With the OFC and the ORFC in mind, do you think that the two conferences have something in common?
I mean, it would be absolutely wonderful, I think, if maybe in some years' time there were more joint events like this going on, or even a joint conference together. I think there's so much more in common than puts them apart. And I think that everyone wants to do the best for the business they're in, the industry they're in, the work that they do. They love what they do. You talk to any farmer, whether it's large or small, they not only love producing food and putting it on people's plates so it's there to feed people, they love the environment. They are part of the environment. If they kill their environment, they haven't got a job left. They haven't got a business, and they're not doing what they love. I mean, you talk to a very big farmer. I've been to many, many very big farms. After the interview's over, the farmer goes, just come and have a look at my barn owls. That's fantastic. You know, and they really enjoy what they're doing. And even a smallholder and a multi-millionaire farmer, they will find something in common that they agree on. They will. Because they're in the same job.
Anna, thank you very much. With Rob York, rural commentator from South Wales. We've both been attending the joint event, joint OFC-ORFC cider event, which I was personally hoping that the discussions between delegates, both conferences, were going to go on for longer than they have. People have been pushed away.
I mean, it's always great to have the joint event anyway. But I think it was a very dangerous thing to do, to start it on a range of ciders starting at 5% going up to 8%. And maybe that's why they wanted us out of the building. But it was a really full house, a really good buzz. It was also quite tricky when you're sat next to a very important government scientist who is saying some very interesting things about, you know, agriculture and food and stuff like that. But of course, it's all off the record. But that's what's very exciting about the two Oxford Farming Conferences that Ben has attended for a number of years.
Well, this is actually my first year going to the OFC. I know that you've been to both conferences for a few years now.
Yeah, and it's very exhausting.
So what is your take on, apart from the logistics of moving between the two, what's your take on how they've changed, both of them and together?
Well, that is quite a loaded question, Ben, because we all know that the Oxford Farming Conference has been around the block for a long time, but as Michael Gove last year maybe exacerbated or highlighted when he went to talk to both of them, there is, and I love this expression, the people will hate me for it, but there is much more common ground between the two of them. It doesn't mean on all fronts, but there's a lot of farmers now who are coming for the Oxford Farming Conference and talking at the Oxford Real Farming Conference, about, say, cover crops. I do sense that the Oxford Real Farming Conference needs to be a bit careful about not excluding agrochemical or government scientist advice on soil and interactions of pests and, you know, pest predators. There's lots of deep stuff that's going to be very exciting to explore, but we mustn't be partisan. Okay, I'm going to be quite rude now and quite provocative.
Do you want this off the record?
No, I think we should stir it up a bit.
Okay.
Because we're all a little bit tribal at the moment, and I think it may be important to identify why we're tribal and then discover how we can detribalize. And maybe some individuals within the Oxford Real Farming Conference are possibly not wanting to mingle with other interests, other tendencies. And I think that is dangerous because it's going to cut out a lot of farmers who want to cross the road between the two conferences.
Yeah, I mean, something I found really interesting this afternoon attending the Young Farmers Rural Youth Project's spring session at the OFC, I kept a little tally, and Brexit was only mentioned twice. Collaboration was mentioned at least a dozen times. Mm. And there is this, I think, more of an ethos and a push, certainly within younger farmers, and I'm not saying this doesn't exist within older generations, because I'm sure it does, but I think maybe as we move forward, there is more of a likelihood, perhaps, that common ground won't actually come necessarily because there'll be two conferences, but actually the fact that there is more open-mindedness.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're now being kicked out. Ben has been drinking and talking too much. but
continue this conversation then.
We will. But there is, no, we can break down the barriers. Individuals need not get in the way. I think we need a little bit of kind of committees. There's nothing wrong with a good committee of different voices. And we're going to be kicked out again, so it's goodbye from Ben and it's goodbye from me.
Rob, thank you very much.
Good morning. I can't pretend I'm not a little bit blurry-eyed after last night, but welcome to the first official day of the Oxford Farming Conference and the Oxford Real Farming Conference. I'm just walking in now. My plan generally is to spend the mornings this week, or for the next 2 days at least, at the OFC and the afternoons at the ORFC. But I mean, there's so much going on at both, which is part of the issue, that you want to be at lots of different places at the same time, and a time machine would definitely come in handy. But I will try and make the most of both as much as I can. I am going to see Michael Gove speak at both conferences, and I'll be particularly interested in the differences and similarities between those two talks and between the questions that delegates at each conference ask.
The political sessions at the Oxford Farming Conference are a traditional highlight, and it's an opportunity for the Secretary of State, as well as the President of the NFU and a member of the opposition in the Commons, to address the farming sector. Michael Gove spoke at both conferences and predictably gave a good show, but as also predicted, gave very little away in terms of new ground or detail. I mean, he can't really at the stage we're at, both with Brexit and the agriculture bill, for which there's still a way to go, politically speaking. But let's return to the conferences themselves. The fact that a Secretary of State is now seemingly routinely appearing at both is a sign that each has seemed to have similar clout. But how might the ORFC and OFC work closer together in future? To continue the quest to answer this question, I next spoke with Kath Delmeny, Chief Executive of Sustain, at the Real Farming Conference.
I'm with Kath Delmeny of Sustain, and we're going to be talking about crossover between Oxford Farming and Oxford Real Farming, a little bit of how Oxford Real Farming has changed over the years. How many Oxford Reels have you been to?
Oh, goodness. It's been going, what, about 10 years now?
Yeah, this is the 10th one.
I think I've been to about 5.
And over those 5 years, because even over those 5 years, it's changed quite a bit.
Absolutely.
What have been the key changes for you?
I think the main thing is that it is now recognised as a place that people really want to get together and talk about a different way of doing farming. Well, not different, because loads of people have been doing it for centuries, obviously. But there is a real sense that this is a good place and an important place to gather and consider the year ahead. And I think it's also become something that's gone on the political map as well.
Yep.
So the fact that last year, we don't want to make too much out of one Secretary of State doing particular things, but at this time in history where Brexit's obviously a massive issue and also changes in agricultural policy that are facilitated by that, the fact that Michael Gove spoke on the stage both at the Oxford Farming Conference and the Oxford Real Farming Conference last year was very symbolic. You know, I'm not just looking at that with rose-tinted spectacles of, you know, hindsight. It felt really like Oxford Real Farming Conference had arrived. And also, we need to, don't we, desperately need to be talking about agroecological, climate-friendly forms of farming. And that is also turning up on the agenda very strongly at the Oxford Farming Conference. The more we coalesce towards solutions, the better. We won't always agree on everything, I'm quite sure, but, you know, all of the people concerned about how we feed ourselves in the future need to be thinking in terms of climate change, water, antibiotics, stewardship, high animal welfare, what happens in trade deals, all of these subjects. Which conference were they discussed at? Both of them.
What would be your take on, say, the idea of, in the future, doing more fringe sessions together? And if we did, if we went down that line, again, we, who are we talking about with we, what sort of common ground topics might you start with?
One of my other hats, apart from working coordinating Sustain, is as a commissioner for the Food, Farming and Countryside Commission. And there are some big themes arising from that deliberative consultative process, which are around land, land value, land use planning, whether we should have a land policy framework, land, you know, a plan for how we use land in the UK and what's it for, how are we going to be having national policy stuff being met through that. Another big area is the money. How is money going to be invested? Not just public money, that's a big issue around the agriculture bill at the moment, but also how should the pension funds be investing? Are they going to start paying for the forests that we need to be putting in? You know, we've been promised a northern forest in Britain. Only a tiny part of that is going to be paid for by public money at the moment. So are any of the big financiers going to get involved in that? I mean, moving the money could be a massive subject for all of us about how better forms of farming can be financed. What's the transition plan? What investment would be needed to do that? Nitrogen, that's a massive one. How are we going to do fertilisation of our soils? Is that going to be going back to rotational cropping for most of the land use in this country? Or are we? What's the plan? If we are on a descent plan from carbon-intensive inputs to agriculture, what's the plan, guys? That would be a great topic for all of us to be engaged with and not at all to get combative about it as a common issue. We need to tackle it.
Do you think there's still a certain snobbishness down the road looking at the ORFC, or is there a new sense of respect?
Ooh, snobbishness. I think there's probably snobbishness both ways, actually. Frankly, I think it's a bit... I used to live on a boat, and we always had jokes that the people on the barges looked down on the canoeists, and the canoeists looked down on the rowers, and the rowers then were snobbish about the barge owners. I think the minute people meet each other and have a chat, they realise there's loads in common. Yeah. But because we've set ourselves up in camps, I mean, quite deliberately with this conference, I think, with the Oxford Real Farming Conference, because this kind of stuff was not being discussed at that time in the Oxford Farming Conference. So in a way, I think, I wasn't here to form it, but it was meant to be a provocation. It was meant to say, hang on a minute, guys, there's loads of stuff that's not being discussed in mainstream farming.
Mm-hmm. And I think probably a lot of people would agree that's been achieved.
Yes, absolutely.
And a huge number of topics
Hats
are now
off.
At the forefront of both conferences, because partly of what Colin and Ruth did 10 years ago.
I totally agree. And Colin is such a visionary on what our species should be doing on a finite planet with finite resources, when there's quite a lot of us now, in terms of making sure that we can eat well long into the future. Every time I'm with Colin, I just feel inspired to think about better ways of doing things. And those are systems ways of doing things. So it's not just about how you grow things better, but how you make sure that there's reward to the farmer to enable that. And there's also a good market for that produce that is respectful of seasonal variation and also all the different difficulties that farmers face, and a culture of decent food so that there's a market pull for it.
And so if there was a message that you could send personally to people who go to the OFC, people who go to the ORFC, a message that sets an agenda for the next 10 years, let's say, what would that be and why?
An agenda for the next 10 years. Well, that is framed by the fact that we live in a time where we have to tackle climate change, of course. And at the same time, we have to tackle inequalities. So there are roughly 8 million, said the UN, of people in our country who can't afford to eat well. Not well, sometimes can't even afford to eat because they're going hungry. Of which half are children. So that's children living in households who can't afford to eat well. At a time of climate change and at a time when farmers are going through enormous uncertainties to do with the weather, to do with agricultural policy, to do with farm payments. So uncertainty characterises farming at the moment. We take food and farming policy seriously when we say let's fix all of those in the round. And I would say that to anybody at the Oxford Farming Conference is that there is lots more in common between these two sets of people who go to the conference, actually loads of people go to both these days, than anybody might assume. And if we can get beyond the things that become contentious and say, can we park those for a bit and talk about the stuff we need to do together to make sure that farmers make a decent living in a way that looks after the soil and doesn't result in too much pollution and isn't burdening pesticide residues into the food supply chain and is delivering on climate change goals and is looking after water and all those things. Of course, we are prepared to pay for that, and that's the tenor of the agriculture bill. But we also want to put lots of effort into making sure those supply chains are fair so that a decent return comes to the farmers and that then decent food makes it all the way through to consumers, and that we should be marketing that in a way that enables healthy diets, healthy and respectable, that sounds, there's a snobbish kind of word, healthy and decent I'll come around to the word decent again, healthy and decent diets that are not screwing over animals, not screwing over farmers, supporting antibiotic stewardship. You know, there's so many big things that we can shift here if we do it in a policy kind of way and also think about it sensibly. And we don't have to do that by beating up on farmers by making food as cheap as possible, because I often hear at lots of events and conferences, yeah, but what about the people in the tower block who can't afford it? Well, the reason they can't afford it is because probably their rent's too high, and probably because their benefits have been stopped because of universal credit rollout, and because they didn't have enough money in the first place because we didn't set the minimum wage at a stupid level that doesn't support all of these things. We talk about the market being able to fix stuff. Well, we've skewed the market towards cheapness, and when you have cheap food, you are dumping on somebody else. Somebody else has to pick up the cost for that, usually the environment, the pigs, the farmer who is not able to make a living. So rebalancing money across that system and saying perhaps there isn't a lot of room for very high profitability in here, but there is a room for decent livelihoods, and how can we make that happen in a way that people can eat well and don't end up with the kinds of modern diseases like diabetes that result from eating cheap manufactured products that come out of commodity crops that we didn't need to subsidise in the first place.
Kath Delmeny. Now, I had numerous conversations at both conferences about common ground and reform and coexistence, but collaboration in some way certainly seemed to be an objective for many. Here's another couple of views, firstly from Patrick Holden, Chief Executive of the Sustainable Food Trust, who I spoke to at Oxford Real, and then from outgoing OFC Director Will Sermon, who spoke with me at the Oxford Farming Conference.
I'm with Patrick Holden of the Sustainable Food Trust. Patrick, thank you for speaking to me. The Oxford Real Farming Conference, if it was founded as the antidote to the Oxford Farming Conference, how successful has it been? And where is it going over the next 5 years?
Short answer, I think it's been extraordinarily successful. More successful than I could possibly have imagined when I participated in the first one 10 years ago. You should know that I have form in this area, because when we started, we being the Organic Growers Association and British Organic Farmers, started the Cirencester conferences, which were held exactly at the same time as the Oxford Farming Conference in 1980. We had a similar disruptive intention, but we weren't so bold as to take our conference to Oxford itself, which we thought would have been a bit full frontal. So instead, we built a conference which was, in a way, the antidote to the other Oxford Farming Conference. And over a period of around 20 years, we got the attendance up to the same level as the traditional Oxford Farming Conference. But because we weren't at Oxford in this sort of semi-confrontational, disruptive mode, it didn't challenge the orthodoxy in the same way that the Oxford Real Farming Conference is now doing. And in addition to that, that was a different time. We're talking nearly 40 years ago that we started the Cirencester conferences, and at that time we were really a tiny band of, you know, mostly ex-hippie urban refugees who were not seen as being anywhere near the mainstream, whereas now the attendance alone at this conference is a major challenge to the establishment, because it's quite clear that more people want to come to this conference than the other one.
Were there similar people at that conference and at the first Oxford Real?
Yes, I bet you if we did a survey of the 1,000+ people who are here looking for participants in the Cirencester conferences, I would guess you'd find 200 of them here who were at one or more of the Cirencester conferences, and there was a very similar atmosphere, and we had mainstream discussions about, you know, systems change. I remember John Vidal, the environment correspondent of The Guardian, saying to me, "This is amazing. I've never been to a conference atmosphere where you feel that collectively we're evolving new thinking about agriculture and food systems." That was the atmosphere there. It's the atmosphere here. And what is really interesting about being here is the number of people from the other conference who are coming and participating. There's no clearer sign than that. People are literally crossing the floor. It's like the Bob Dylan song, you know, "The times they are a-changing, the times are a-changing," and you can feel it here at this conference.
And what's your perspective on today, common ground between the two conferences? Is there any?
I think there's an enormous amount of common ground, and what is wonderful to me after all these years is that there are conventional farmers, intensive farmers. I've just come out of a session where two of the farmers on our panel were intensive farmers, and then a third panelist was Savills, who are managing 1 million acres of land, we're speaking a common language. So it's a very exciting time. The majority of farmers now have become commodity slaves, producing food at or below the cost of production. They know their soils are dead, they know their biodiversity is declining. Many of them are thinking, what can I do now? And then, of course, the Brexit uncertainty is adding to it. And there are a small minority of slightly fossilised people who are stuck in probably climate change deniers who think they can carry on exploiting the natural capital that they inherited without thinking about the consequences for their children. But I think they are in a minority. I think most farmers, if they got the right signals from government, which would create a shift in the profitability so that if you farmed in a more sustainable way, you'd make more money, and if you farmed in an unsustainable way, you'd make less money, they'd shift. Because unlike me, who has a day job and has been able to indulge my interest in sustainability over 40 years, most of them are going to follow the best business case. It's about the money. You can't blame farmers for that.
Absolutely. What would be your take, something I'm putting to everyone that I'm speaking to, on joint fringe sessions? Not many, say a couple, 2-3 joint ticketed events that perhaps share common ground, and also joint social events.
Yeah, I think it'd be fantastic. Fantastic. And you know, if you say, oh no, we can't take the risk of doing that sort of thing because, you know, the enemy are going to infiltrate and dilute our radicalism, that comes from a position of fear and threat. We don't any longer need to fear the old system which is breaking down. We need to be generous. We need to be inclusive. We need to welcome, because all these farmers, you know, they've got children who are probably challenging what they're doing, and they're aware that climate change and soil fertility depletion and biodiversity loss is happening on their own land. You know, I mean, they know this. So I think we've just got to reach out. And also, we're not perfect. You know, all us ex-hippie farmers, we've got a few sins in our background that we've got to be open about.
With your Sustainable Food Trust hat on, what is the role, do you think, of the SFT within this shift of collaboration? Because it's something I find really interesting about the SFT, and perhaps the Pasture-Fed Livestock Association could be another example of organisations that could have a foot in both conferences and begin to shake things up that way.
I'd like to hope that we can do that, because I think we need to develop a common language and system of sustainability assessment. And instead of separating those that are sustainable and calling them organic, and obviously I was very much part of that in my time at the Soil Association, and saying that the other people need to become organic, otherwise they're part of the problem. We need to develop a new framework for sustainability assessment, which is totally inclusive. So I can go to one of the farmers across the road and say, look, here's my soil sustainability index or my biodiversity index. It's not that good, but I want to get it higher. What's yours? And then we can converse, and we can both agree that we're on a road towards increasing the sustainability of our total farming system. And it's like a stairway to heaven, not a yes or no decision.
I'll go back to that original question of a vision for the next 5 years for Oxford Real and Oxford Farming. What would be the main thing that, from your perspective, you would like to see both conferences move towards?
I think one shouldn't crystallise a decision or an objective, which is that it should become one conference. I don't think that's necessary. I think it's a bit like, you know, if you have in your stomach the microbiome and you have some pathogenic organisms, the scientific word for, I think, is competitive advantage or something like that, where the good bacteria control the toxic ones and prevail, and in a healthy digestive system, there will be pathogens and, you know, E. coli and things like that. Part of the great biodiversity of the world, but the force of the good bacteria will overwhelm this relatively small number of the toxic ones. And I think one needs to see the evolution and the development of new farming systems and the conferences that will be a receptacle for that development in the similar way. There will be people at the Oxford Real Farming Conference who are unreconstructed dinosaurs, and there will be more of those across the road. But in both cases, the intelligence of the atmosphere here is so powerful that you cannot come into this conference. I mean, like the vice president of the NFU, Stuart Roberts, he came yesterday and he said, "I've never been here before, and I'll be back next year." The experience of being here is such that it influences your state because of the very positive atmosphere of everyone else here.
So my name is Will Sermon. I'm a farmer's son from Worcestershire, and I am a recently former Oxford Farming Conference director. I've just finished my third year as conference organiser.
Let's start by your take, Will, on the OFC this year. Some highlights and some of the changes that you've noticed for this year.
My highlights are always when we have interactive discussion, when people share ideas, when people from different sides of a debate are able to civilly, calmly, when they're able to express their views and inform and try and actually challenge me when I'm listening to a debate or a speaker or a question and answer session. So in terms of the conference so far, I really enjoyed this morning's session, which was all around Brexit and trade. There were some very different viewpoints on the panel. Labour Party spokesman Barry Gardner, Sir Lockwood Smith, who's from New Zealand, who's very, very free marketeer, as you might imagine. And then there was a government representative and a farmer as well. And it was good because you had people talking and listening. And I think the problem you find on a panel, and you sort of expand this out as to an issue more widely in life, I think, as well, is when you don't listen, you don't learn. And I think when we had the panel discussion this morning, there was lots of listening, talking, learning, and people putting across their points in a really measured manner, which made for an interesting discussion.
We've just been talking before we started recording about the energy that you mentioned at the Oxford Real Farming Conference. We're currently having lunch. It's nearing the end of the conference. We've got the scholar session coming up here. There seems good energy here. What's the difference?
There is some good energy. It's great. Oxford Farming Conference is fantastic. I've been to the Real Farming Conference a lot of times. I went to the very first Real Farming Conference 10 years ago. Which is very different to how it is now. And I've seen it evolve. I've seen it change. I've seen it evolve. But one thing that I don't think has changed is the passion and the energy and the excitement that you get from people who go to the Real Farming Conference, which is really great to see and draws me back again and again and again back to the Real Farming Conference. And I haven't actually been this year, but last year I went to the Real Conference. You walk in, and there is a palpable energy in there. Even before you start listening to speakers, or before you start sitting down in the session, there's a palpable energy of people and talking and socialising, and it's really great and exciting. I like that. What I've been doing, what I'd like to do at the Oxford Farming Conference, is to try and get some of that energy into these rooms as well. We have a reputation, or have had a reputation, of being very buttoned up, I think, at the Oxford Farming Conference. It's all suits and ties, and I don't think it needs to be that. I think ideas come and ideas flow when people relax and when people are able to sit down and talk and take their tie off and not worry about who's talking to who or looking over your shoulder to speak to the next person who's a bit more important than the last person. And I feel like that's where we're moving away from with the Oxford Farming Conference, and it's a journey.
What does the OFC do well?
OFC brings fantastic speakers. It brings a packed house every year, year in, year out, to talk about ideas in agriculture. And it does that without fail. It has discussion, it has people networking. You talk to all sorts of different people from all sorts of different backgrounds. And I love that. And I think it does that very well.
Is there anything that the Real Farming Conference could learn from it? Perhaps from a punter's perspective?
From a punter's perspective, I mean, it goes back to the discussion about what sort of agriculture do you want. I think it's almost like my analogy would be, what can an organic farm learn from a conventional farmer? What can a big farmer learn from a small farmer? Or a livestock farmer from an arable farmer? Or a farmer from Zimbabwe? We had a great speaker from Zimbabwe here yesterday, from a farmer in the UK. And I always think there's things that we can learn from each other.
Yeah. Is it what, say, Colin Tudge would term the neoliberal model? The fact that they are too fundamentally opposed, in that view, they're two fundamentally opposed routes that agriculture can take. Is that a fundamental issue?
That would be the minority view, in my opinion. I think if you actually sit down and talk individually to anybody from this conference or the other conference, and you sit and have a cup of coffee with them or a cup of tea, and you talk about the issues facing agriculture, I think oftentimes you will find that you actually agree on more than you disagree on. Or you will have a good discussion. And I think this polemic, we're right, you're wrong, it's one way or the highway, or my way or the highway, is unhelpful for actually finding a true, realistic pathway to making agriculture work for the environment, for animal welfare, for consumers. And I think that the only way that we can actually make it work is by sharing ideas and coming to it together with a collaborative approach.
Yeah. What would you say, for example, of having more fringe sessions, more joint fringe sessions, perhaps a joint ticketed session and more socials?
Yes. So I think definitely more socials. The fringes are great when you get people who are able to let their hair down, so to speak, a little bit. And actually, when you sort of take the badges off as well, that makes quite a big difference. I mean, if people wander around and you're all badged up in your team kit, it makes it quite hard to actually... Well, not hard, but people stick to their tribes.
Yeah,
and so how do you get rid of the tribes? I think you take their tribal badges off and get people mixing, and you do that in fringe events, and you get people sitting around a table and discussing the issues of the day that we all come to Oxford to discuss. We're all passionate about agriculture and food in the future.
So would you ban the tie from the Oxford Farming Conference?
Would
you be that radical?
Do you know what? I am that radical, I'm that disruptive, that I've not yet worn a tie at this year's conference. And I hazard a guess that I might be the first director to not wear a tie for an entire Oxford Farming Conference.
Should go down in the history books.
And goes down in the history books. And nobody's yet told me that that I'm not welcome here. So it's not really made much difference.
So the next 5 years, if we are moving towards a more collaborative approach, what does that 5 years look like once we've got there?
I think it's like all these things, it's a step-by-step process. You're not going to go from this year to next year to a single farming festival in Oxford. But I think maybe if you have a goal at the end of, you know, where are we trying to get to? I mean, maybe it is, you know, plucking this out of the air, but maybe it's a farming festival in Oxford. We kind of have it by without name at the moment, because we have 2,000 people in Oxford who are all coming here to have these discussions and to talk about the future. But on a step-by-step process, I think there has to be discussion between the boards of both conferences and find ways to put on these joint fringes. We've done some joint fringes already, and I think they work really well, in my opinion. Find what works. It's like building a friendship, isn't it? It takes time before you really get to know each other. But I think the first step is already happening. We're already reaching out and to each other. This morning I put out a Twitter message yesterday evening to say I'm going for a 6:30 a.m. run around Oxford.
This is great.
This morning. So I tweeted it. About 20 people, and I tweeted it with the hashtag ORFC and OFC, so to both groups. And about 20 messages came back from people saying, I forgot my running shoes, but I'd love to join.
Yeah.
But from both, I know, because I checked all their profiles, they were from both conferences. And in the end, we had a wonderfully large turnout of three of us. But we were 50-50. We were, well, apart from me, we were one real conference and we were one Oxford conference. So I'd say that was a success. And we went for a run, 20 minutes. We talked about sheep farming. And I could have been from anywhere. He could have been from anywhere. And it was really nice.
Super. Let's hope that becomes a thing next year.
Yeah.
I felt very lucky that Thursday evening for me combined the best of both conferences. Firstly, I went along to the highly traditional yet very entertaining OFC Oxford Union debate, which this year featured Guy Smith and Sarah Bell proposing, and Hilary McGrady, Director General of the National Trust, and the RSPB's Tom Lancaster opposing a motion relating to profits versus public goods. Afterwards, whilst most Oxford Farming Conference delegates went to the post-debate supper at Christchurch College, I went down the road to grab some food with a real farming conference at St Aldgate's Church. It was a brilliant night, which actually culminated in some excellent discussions in the pub with both Oxford Real and Oxford Farming delegates talking together. Just the kind of vision that lots of people who I've spoken to during this Oxford conference season have seemingly been calling for. On to day two. It's day two of the Oxford Farming Conference and the Oxford Real Farming Conference. I'm just walking in to the Oxford Real, where I'll be spending the morning, and then the plan is to head over to Oxford Farming in the afternoon in the quest for common ground. What are delegates saying to me in terms of
the search for common ground, whether there's the opportunity for more joint sessions, say, in future. Well, I think generally people are overwhelmingly positive with that idea in mind. There seems to be a lot of open-mindedness in both. There seems to be a lot of draw for collaboration and working together, if not necessarily with the same methods, at least challenging ideas. So, with that regard, I'm actually overwhelmingly positive for that kind of model in the future. I'll be speaking to Colin Tudge this morning, the co-founder of the Oxford Real Farming Conference. I'll be particularly interested to see his view in what the next 10 years of the Oxford Real look like and whether there's any capacity for working together with Oxford Farming.
I'm with Colin Tudge, who co-founded the conference, the Oxford Real Farming Conference, 10 years ago now, Colin.
Yeah.
What have been the big changes in your mind over that period?
I think the main thing, which was put to me by a farmer, because I was saying to this particular farmer, very good farmer, you know, we haven't really made much difference, have we? Because we're still pressing ahead with the neoliberal high-tech version of farming, which very anomalously is called conventional. And he said, oh yes, because, he said, 10 years ago, the kind of words that you're now using, like agroecology, certainly like enlightened agriculture, which is the broader concept, certainly words like biosphere instead of the word environment, which simply means surroundings, they weren't even on the on anybody's radar, as the expression is. But now they are. And so that even people like the original Oxford Farming Conference, at least they know what the vocabulary is, up to a point. Mm. So I think the main change has been that we've got things onto the agenda, helped to, which should have been there forever, but in fact dropped out.
And do you speak in the circles of the Oxford Farming Conference? Do you have conversations with any delegates there in terms of what their views are?
Well, the new man who's taking over next year is called Matt Naylor. Very good chat. We've had nice conversations with him. So the answer is to have good, friendly conversations. But there is still, and I think probably always will be, a very clear distinction between the two, which some people are very confused about. They don't understand what the distinction is. As far as I'm concerned, they are the establishment conference. And what that means, not that they're all stuffed shirts, because they're not necessarily, that they start with the position that the status quo is, as it were, the norm and is realistic. And the status quo is basically neoliberal economics based on competition within the market for market share and for maximisation of profit. And it's also very technophilic. Always they are looking, really you could say always they are looking for the magic bullet, with this tremendous belief in science as the source of omniscience and of high tech, science-based tech, as a potential source of omnipotence. So in the past there has been promotion, for example, for GMOs and drones and all the rest of it. And if you deviate from the neoliberal technophilic agenda, that is said to be unrealistic, this is their word, because that is the way things are. Now the fact that their way of looking at their form of agriculture, neoliberal technophilic agriculture, is clearly very, very destructive, cannot be sustained, is leading us all to the buffers, us all being both humanity and the biosphere as a whole. Nevertheless, they say what we're talking about is realistic because it is the status quo. Whereas what you're talking about, which is an attempt to get away from that, is unrealistic, even though it's a thing that could be good for the world as a whole. So we start with the premise of what I've been calling for some time, enlightened agriculture, and real farming is a contraction of that somewhat long, I like it, but you know, other people say it should be shorter, so we call it real farming. And that is based on the assumption, as a loose definition, that enlightened agriculture is farming that is expressly designed to provide everybody in the world with good food forever without wrecking the rest of the biosphere. And the point about this is that it is eminently possible, technically. I mean, at the moment, you know, 1 billion people go hungry and half of our fellow creatures are in danger of extinction, mass extinction, well underway. And of course, we're facing climate change. And agriculture, especially the kind that we are now practicing, is a core reason for all of these things. yet, good food for everybody forever is certainly not only possible, but almost technically easy. And there is no reason for the mass extinction. We could, I like to say that our descendants could still be here in a million years. That's what we're more to mean by the long term, a million years. Then we can think about the following, but, you know, for the time being, that'll do. And our fellow creatures, most of the ones that are with us now, should still be around us. And we should have a much better relationship than we have with most of them now. So, the question then is, how do you actually make enlightened agriculture work? And that's what the whole agenda of this conference is about. Mm.
Do you think there is a place for that challenging view within a session, say, at the Oxford Farming Conference? And how do you think that would go down?
Well, I'm sure. I mean, if I was invited, 1 hour, we can get across a lot of ideas. I am very impressed by the fact, which I've only just discovered, that the Gettysburg Address, which changed the course of Western history, is 271 words long. At a BBC speed, that takes about 1 minute 40. Yeah. So you could say a lot in an hour. Yeah. On the other hand, a proper discussion with them, a proper two-hour session with some of them, that could be very interesting.
So with that in mind, as part of this 5 years ahead, do you see a place for perhaps, not a lot, but maybe a couple of joint fringe sessions that could be jointly ticketed? Could that work as a model?
It could, but I mean, yes, and certainly, and with Matt Naylor in situ, that could easily happen. I regard that, to be honest, without disdain to them or to us, that would be a trivial ambition. I mean, what we're really trying to do, first of all, is to achieve this change of mindset. But secondly, which is, to this end, we are talking about building networks. This is what the whole thing is about. Because it isn't only us thinking along these lines. There are dozens of groups out there which know they have things in common, but also feel the need to put their thoughts together. There's a strong hunger, I suppose you could say, for network. But then beyond that, the question is, how do you convert a network into power? And I don't know that anybody's cracked that. There's a sort of Hegelian idea that, you know, history unfolds, and once you have changed a significant part of the zeitgeist, that the power will automatically accrue by some kind of mysterious democratic process. And it doesn't seem to be true, is the point. So how do you get power into this without becoming a kind of top-down another institution fighting, you know, to be on top? That's the real challenge.
And my final question, is there any common ground between the Oxford Farming Conference and the Oxford Real Farming Conference?
There is loads of common ground because, I mean, most of the people, no, not most, but a lot of the people who go to the Oxford Farming Conference are farmers. And most of the people who come to our conference are farmers. So they're all trying to do the same thing. They're all trying to grow stuff. And there's a lot of concern in the Oxford Farming Conference for what I call the biosphere. They don't want to wreck it gratuitously. So there's the whole, you know, the idea of agroecology is tempting to many of those guys. They all have to stay in business somehow or other. Depends how much money you want to make. But so there's loads of common ground. And there are loads of common problems, like what really is appropriate technology. And there's an assumption that appropriate technology necessarily means low technology. Well, up to a point it does. I mean, you know, if you put, you know, a cart can be an appropriate technology in some remote village somewhere. But, you know, a cart benefits from high tech because you need... Actually, carts always work better with nice vulcanised rubber tyres and they're high tech and so on. So what is appropriate technology is actually a very big question that we share and so on. And, you know, what are economic structures can be made to work and so on, business models, all that. But where the difference lies is, as I've said, you know, the fundamental underlying economic and governmental premise, whether your economy is geared to the maximisation of wealth and to competition, or whether it's geared to creating a stable biosphere, flourishing biosphere, and geared to human happiness, which are quite different, and they lead you in different directions.
Colin touched there from the Real Farming Conference.
Now, Matt Naylor is an OFC director and next year will be chairing the Oxford Farming Conference. I spoke to him near the end of the OFC about his vision for Oxford Farming in the future and how it might collaborate with Oxford Real. Matt, your take on the conference this year?
It's been really good, really busy. When you organise a conference like this, it's exciting to have such an uncertain sort of political situation because everybody has an opinion. As a business operator, it's obviously a terrifying time, but as a conference organiser, it just generates so many views. It's been really stimulating. Mm.
So let's get radical. What are your aspirations for Oxford Farming next year?
Well, I think that it's really important that we represent all views in the chamber. What we want in Oxford in January is to talk about everybody's views on food, and we want to look at how society benefits from the way that farmers operate. So we're always happy to have tough conversations. Here last year in the union, we debated whether meat eating would become as unpopular as smoking in the future. This year we had Caroline Lucas put the case for a meat tax in the conference and to redistribute money to increase a basic minimum living income for families so that they can afford to pay a higher price for food. So we love to get that debate and really put it in front of farmers. Our strapline is challenge, inform, inspire, and it's challenge first. Mm.
So with that in mind, is there room for greater collaboration in whatever way with the Oxford Real Farming Conference?
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, one thing that, and I really, really like Colin and Ruth, and we have lunch together occasionally and share quite a similar view on life in many respects. And so I think it's interesting that circumstances have taken society, whether it's to the middle or whether it's, I think a lot of things that seemed radical seem less radical now, but we are moving to a world where everybody wants less carbon, less diffuse pollution. They want to use less fossil fuel. Everybody acknowledges that wages need to be higher, that food needs to be more expensive, that we need less food waste. So I think there are so many acknowledged truths that increasingly it looks like there are two conferences which are talking about the same things. Yes. But we both sell out, and we're both so busy with the excitement of it. I think that, you know, being here, I would have loved to have nipped down and had a cup of coffee with them, but there just wasn't time.
There genuinely isn't the time.
So it just shows how much enthusiasm there is.
Having tried to do both things.
Well, it's increasingly impossible for the press and everybody, but so the one thing you'd say is, isn't it amazing that there is so much energy? Yeah. We do, Innovative Farmers organise a cider debate, this year it was about cider, and which is open to delegates from both conferences. I think there's scope for more events, and certainly artistic events. We did a comedy night last year, but I would love it if Oxford Council could be persuaded to do a farmer's market, if we could get plays, art exhibitions, book readings around agriculture and the countryside, which delegates from both conferences and also people from Oxfordshire who are interested in food could come along to and join in, feed into this conversation about how we're going to be fed in the future.
Do you think, because it's something that quite a few people have mentioned to me, do you think price is a pinch point for a lot of people when it comes to the Oxford Farming Conference? It's not a cheap thing to come to.
It is an expensive conference. It costs a lot to organise. But then I do think that I quite like travel. It's one of my naughty, it's one of my environmental sins is to travel. But I just think that it does enrich you so much. And so coming here, there is a financial cost, but you do meet people and you learn things and your life grows. I know that we could have a long philosophical discussion about how much impact any of us should have on the planet, but I do think there's a benefit to being here.
So what message would you give to delegates of both conferences to set an agenda for the next few years?
Well, we think that certainly one thing that interests us here is making sure that food really does serve society. So we're interested in nutrition rather than calories. cutting food waste and making sure that the production's appropriate. There is a big conversation, which is relevant to many people who come here, about biodiversity services, natural capital, how can people be paid for public goods. So I suspect that will continue, that alongside a debate about public access will continue to feed into it. But I can see much more a movement towards farms becoming much more individual and having really specific, unique selling points of their own. So, yeah, we'll no doubt keep showcasing examples of that.
Matt Naylor, the incoming chair of the Oxford Farming Conference. Time for conclusions. Is there a desire for having an element of collaboration between the two conferences? Well, from what I heard this year, I would say that the answer is yes. I don't think there's a need to radically change the nature of each conference, but instead increase the potential for delegates at both conferences to meet and speak with each other, from social events to perhaps a joint discussion or lecture. It's only when we acknowledge the common ground between us that we can start reforming together. Once again, I want to thank everybody at both conferences who took the time to speak to me about common ground and collaboration, and also to the organisers of each conference who really should be proud of what was achieved this year. I very much look forward to the conferences in 2020, and who knows, there may even be a greater collaborative element to them. I'm Ben Eagle, and you've been listening to a special Oxford Farming Conference and Oxford Real Farming Conference episode of the Meet the Farmers podcast. You can find previous episodes on iTunes or by visiting thinkingcountry.com. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Benji_Eagle. Benji is B-E-N-J-Y. I hope you can join me for the next episode, when I'll be talking to the chair of the Nature Friendly Farming Network, Martin Lines, on his farm in Cambridgeshire. Until then, though, I wish you a very happy and healthy new year, and thank you very much for listening.